Do you like film? Do you like comedy? Do you like your childhood memories?
One more take?
Yeah.
Lewis and Pete's bad nostalgia film club.
Each episode sees comedian Lewis Charlesworth and Pete Phillipson revisit a classic childhood film through the eyes of an adult to see how messed up it truly is. Be it Back to the Future for its story of incest, Mrs. Doubtfire for its tale of the creepy cross-dressing father babysitter, or Home Alone with its sinister home invasion toddler torturer nightmare.
Bad nostalgia.
The Vintage Series.
Yo.
Hello people and welcome to Bad Nostalgia. BN hashtag Bad Nostalgia at Bad Nostalgia on Facebook, Twitter, Pornomatic, YouTube, everything, your life, our life, together. Cult, underrated, small audience, big potential, Uganda. Hello. I'm Lewis Charlesworth, comedian, writer, director, performer, actor, podcaster, everythinger. And you, sorry, Pete?
I'm Pete. That's and you're a writer, Pete. Comedian, podcaster, squash champion.
Keep going. Give it to me. Come on.
Lothario.
Yeah.
Badminton ace.
All right.
Squash rookie.
Yes. All-round good guy.
Yes, mate.
Good. Let's kick it off. Right, you may have noticed that Pete did drop a couple of things in there where you're like, that's a bit left field. What does that mean? He called himself a squash rookie and he's talking about badminton. It's this sport thing. Well, we've got to break it to you, people. We're getting fit, aren't we, Pete?
We are, mate.
We're getting proper ding-dong.
Yeah, mate.
Willy Wallinger bang-bang fit. We've just been playing squash together, haven't we?
A game of squash this evening.
Yeah.
Just to get us like match fit for you guys to get those endorphins buzzing,
exactly.
To get our comedy brains working just for you
to feel sharp, fit body, fit mind.
Yeah,
I kind of undermined it a bit.
Yeah, I feel fucking just knackered to be honest.
Yeah, let's just.
It didn't really work.
No, it didn't. I've got an extra long trailer. The trailer's about 5 minutes long this time,
good.
Guys. No, I'm joking. Don't zone out. I'm not joking. And I did undermine our little workout as well, didn't I? Because I got us a Domino's pizza just before
we
went.
Yeah, you showed up with a Domino's, with a full 12-inch Domino's pizza.
But don't build a Domino's outside the fucking leisure centre. What is that about?
You showed up with this blue cardboard box with like the lid open. You're walking towards me, and I was like, "Oh, look at Lewis. He's on his laptop. He's working on something for tonight's show. He's so hard working." No, he had a 12-inch meat fist.
It's not right that though, because like leisure centres have a commitment to the people to make them healthy and everything. So there's in terms of like planning permission, if you really look into it, they probably are tied to the council in some way because it's got a kind of a legitimate good. Beneficial thing to the people.
Yeah.
So then how the fuck after that did a Domino's get planning permission to build one right
outside it?
It totally undermines it. I'm really angry.
It's capitalism, mate.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Do you like the way I'm acting as though I had no hand in whether I ate a Domino's pizza or not? Like, it was against my will. It was against my will.
You saw that offer.
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
I feel like the guy who sued McDonald's, that fat bastard. I feel like him.
I just don't understand why you got the pizza before you went into the gym.
I don't know. I was feeling weak.
It's a reward, mate.
It was a reward. It was a reward that I had before I played squash.
Yeah.
Oh god, it felt really embarrassing going onto the court with a fucking big box, the half-eaten pizza on the court.
He went to me. He went, mate. Do you think they'll let us in with this pizza? I said, yeah, mate.
I know.
It's a pizza, not
good,
not drugs.
I know. I don't know what on what grounds would they have kicked me out. Is it illegal? I don't know. but anyway, we're here. We're on a show, aren't we?
Yes, mate.
Which has nothing to do with squash or pizza.
No, it doesn't.
Nothing. Everything to do with film.
Yes.
Comedy. Right? Vintage children's films, which are highly inappropriate, but we didn't realise at the time. Right? Okay, so what are we doing today, Pete? What film?
Oliver. Never before has a boy wanted more.
Very good.
Thank you.
I didn't know any of the words.
I knew you weren't going to know the words to that.
Right.
I knew when I sung the second bit, you were just going to go...
Yeah, I know. I never do. You always know the words, don't you? You've got that kind of mind.
Oh, yeah.
Mind for the detail. Mr. Pete Phillips with the details. Right, okay. So let's just crack things on. We've been a lot of preamble talking shit.
And a bit indulgent, haven't we?
Yeah, let's accelerate now. Okay, good. As we do now, we always have the music from the actual film itself as the bed music for the nostalgia part. And everyone remembers this, don't they? Genius, of course. Everyone remembers this bit, don't they? Where is love?
Should we try and do a harmony?
Don't.
No?
No, that was really bad.
Okay.
Okay. That's not her there is.
Right.
Okay.
No, come on. Just try it once. I'll try and harmonise. Okay.
Do you want to do the harmonise?
I'm just going to make love the harmony bit.
And I'm going to keep low,
Where is love?
Yeah. It was technically appropriate. But it still sounded awful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Let's never do that again.
It was a shame, because you had the right idea.
I know.
The execution was just, like, painful.
I know.
I don't know. You were just an octave too high. That's all.
Okay.
I don't know what I'm talking about.
Don't listen to me.
I don't know what an octave is.
You said that then, and I just went, oh, yeah, probably was. And then I was like, hang on.
He's right. Yeah. He knows all about octaves. An octave is fucking a squiggly thing that lives in the sea, as far as I'm concerned.
I think you meant a semitone.
Oh, look at you with your quavers.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, where are we? Let's keep the focus.
Shut up, you cleft.
Jesus.
Hello.
Right. So, Oliver.
Oliver.
1968. They've reinterpreted it again and again and again, haven't they? It gets done here like every 5 to 10 years. But this, when you say Oliver, people know you mean this Oliver.
Yeah.
The 1968 Oliver.
Yeah.
The Carol Reed. The Oliver Reed.
Yeah.
The little lad who ends up being bummed by Michael Jackson later on in life, Oliver Reed.
Yeah.
Oliver. It's true, it was in the Mirror. True. So, here we are, 1968. We've got the classic Oscar-winning, beautiful Oliver. What do you remember, anything?
Do you know what, mate? I know that I used to watch this film a lot, but I can't remember when, I can't remember the time in my life it represents.
Uh-huh.
I think we may have done it for a school production when I was about 8.
Okay.
And we had to watch the film as, like, research. And that is the only time I think I remember watching it, but I can only remember the bit where Oliver gets sort of taken away from Fagin and goes to live in the, and they're all thinking about how to get him back. That's the only thing I can remember. Obviously, when I watched it, it all came back to me. But
yeah.
I don't know why. I know I used to watch it all the time, but I can't remember.
No specific memories.
I'm so specific with everything, but this.
No. Yeah. Very, very similar to me. I must have watched, the last time I watched this properly, I must have literally been like preschool or something, because nothing was even coming back, not properly.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but it was certain things, like some of the songs, they did come back to me. I'm not too sure how much I remembered from when I actually watched it and how much I remember from other things that have riffed off it and borrowed from it. You know, like, oh, that's the Halifax advert. You know, consider yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the things have riffed off it so much because the film's so iconic, so you don't know if you're relating to it from when you first originally watched it, or you're relating to the kind of secondhand experience. If you're relating to Howard, or you're relating to the little blonde lad, you know, I mean, the two are obviously very different.
Yeah.
So it was never, I was never sure, but what I was sure of is that the whole experience of watching it was completely familiar.
Yeah.
And the bed music has run out. I'm going to try and tee it up again. It was Where Is Love, nostalgia music. Here we go. Here we go.
Lewis is man in the fort this evening, ladies and gentlemen.
I did it.
Michelle's been back the past few episodes. And
thanks for filling them in.
Yeah, we usually start each episode by saying how great it is that Michelle's back, and how, you know, Lewis doesn't have a look of panic on his face because he didn't have to control all the knobs and the buttons and everything. But Michelle's away this week. Where is she anyway?
I don't know. I think she's on holiday.
She's always going on holiday.
She's always on holiday.
Yeah.
I don't know. Right, anyway. Sorry, we're back. Thanks for that cover there, Pete.
No worries, mate.
You covered it in quite an appropriate way, because I forgot to say that. Thank you. Right, so what were we saying? Oliver, back in the day, I don't really remember anything from it specifically. The things like Nancy, I didn't even know about that little gem that she was sat there with those little puppies.
Absolutely. Beautiful.
Charismatic as well.
Oh,
not just beautiful, charismatic.
Yeah.
Yeah, fantastic.
I think the one, maybe one thing I can probably claw back from when you watch as a kid is just really liking the character of Oliver and really rooting for him, just feeling so sorry for him and just wanting everything to work out okay
for
him, because he's such an underdog.
Okay.
I think I I don't know. Maybe I felt like that at some point in my childhood. Maybe that's why I used to watch it a lot. Maybe I felt like an underdog.
You're remembering more than I am there, can remember feeling that way. What I do remember from my childhood that is strongly relates to this film is when I was 11 in first year secondary school, we did an extract from Oliver, which we performed at various places at school, one time of which was in front of everyone at assembly, and I played the Artful Dodger.
Amazing.
So I know the lyrics to that song, and I was singing it along, and I was having this weird nostalgic moment where I was like, because I completely forgot that I'd done this.
Yeah.
And as that song came on, I was like, shit, I know the words to this because I've performed this. And that was the first time it occurred to me that I had. So this weird moment where I was watching that film just the other night, that moment was happening, and I was actually reliving the experience of when I was on stage. And that was one of the first times I was on stage.
And how old were you?
I was 11. So, I mean, first time, you know, after primary school, I was fucking all over it in primary school. Wow. But this was my first secondary school performance.
So this was before Artful Dodger and Craig David, even?
Even before that.
Rewind.
If anything, I've got legitimate reason to ask for some sort of commission off him.
Yeah.
To be honest. Because he's black as well, like me. So yeah, I remember, me and the guy playing Oliver Twist, Saul Muscat Terribly, I believe, is Maltese, that's why he's got an interest in him. We were first years, and we were singing that song. And there was a girl playing Nancy and a girl playing another buxom wench slash whore type girl. And they were both fifth formers. They were both like 15, 16 years old. So they were like proper women. And we were 11 years old. And so the dynamic was really appropriate because we really, really wanted to fuck.
I bet they
those 15 year old girls because they were women. And they were like, we're playing along, but you're like cute, but this is a bit weird, but I'm being forced to kind of play along with this idea. So it was like the dynamic was totally appropriate for it.
So they were like grown women to you,
they
basically.
Were pretty much
yeah,
women.
Yeah, because
really,
you were like
really attractive.
Prepubescent.
And we're
like,
prepubescent,
yeah.
We wouldn't even know what to do in an erection if we got one, to be honest. So yeah, there was that kind of experience, and yeah, it was just really nice, and it made me feel nostalgic for Oliver in a completely different way.
Yeah.
So yeah, did you have anything else, Oliver wise?
That was everything, I think, mate.
Yeah. Okay, well, lovely.
Yeah.
Nice.
I really hope it didn't cut out there when you were talking about those 15-year-old girls. I hope, like, the first bit didn't cut out and then someone tuned in.
Oh, yeah. Probably would. Right, okay, so...
No one's listening.
Let's listen to the trailer of Oliver, which is quite a lengthy one, but it is a proper, legit, old vintage trailer. I think you're going to enjoy it, lots of people.
I want some more.
More?
The word for Oliver is more. More.
You got a bigger pocket for two.
More than the motion picture screen has ever offered. Internationally famed stage triumph transformed into a monumental musical experience. Oh, for Oliver. Ten of mischievous rascals, hand-picked villains, lovable half-grown pickpockets, and a name that spells rogue and rich laughter.
These sausages are mouldy!
Shut up and drink your gin!
Here is the Fagin of wild and wicked fun.
I'm reviewing the situation. Can a fella be a villain all his life?
Bill Sykes, the thieving bully.
Have you ever heard the sound a chicken makes when they're ringing off its name?
Can't say I have read them.
They squawk, Fagin. They squawk.
That round bounder, Mr. Bumble.
Is you trembling when I speak, Oliver?
No, I'm not.
And as the brave, terrified, loving Nancy, a smashing new personality.
You'll have to kill me before I let you lay a hand on
my
boy!
Just tell me, you keep out of
this! I won't betray his trust, though people say I must.
Here is the sound, the spectacle, the style. the exuberant life, the lusty excitement of the one and only Oliver.
If you go on the way you started, you will be the greatest man of all time.
Oliver, the boy who dared to ask for more. And one of the lovable, laughable characters of all time, the Artful Dodger.
He's going to be a right little circus.
It's much, much more than a musical. With 14 marvelous, memorable songs, here are some of them.
You don't mind having to go without things. It's a fine life.
It's a fine.
Don't be gone, I'll be back soon. Give me one long glass of pleasure. Remember our old tune. Be back soon.
Well, that was one humdingity dog of a big, fat, long trailer. I feel like we need to start all over again.
I don't think we needed to watch the film, did we? Really?
The trailers back then were so weird because it gives you no context for what happens, no plot, no admin, no synopsis. It just literally plays highlights of the film.
Yeah.
Like, if you hadn't seen it, you would have no sense of what that film is about.
Yeah.
But you would be like, that sounds like a right good time. I don't know what the fuck's going on. Yeah. It seems like a right good time. Yeah. Actually, I needed to say before, like before we even started, we've had some good listener stats for the show in the past week. Yeah, we had. I might have mentioned this to you before off air, so I'll do it again now. Pretend it's the first time I've said it.
Okay, mate. Okay.
We had some people from Ghana. I always say it's Uganda. It's actually Ghana. Ghana.
Ghana.
Yeah. So I need to differentiate between the two.
Okay.
Ghana.
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 A base in Ghana.
Yeah, yeah. We've got a base in Ghana.
That's amazing.
Last week, someone. I'm assuming it was the same person.
Okay. Right?
Someone in Ghana, one singular person in Ghana, listened, played, not downloaded, played and listened to every single episode we have on Podomatic 22, every single episode all the way through within the space of 24 hours.
Serious?
Yes. So, guys,
that is amazing.
That is the challenge.
Yeah.
That is the benchmark, people.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy doesn't even fucking understand English. And he loves the show. Do you know what I mean? Well, maybe he does. I don't know. What do they speak over there? I don't know.
There's a lot of French colonies, I think.
Is there? In Ghana?
Yeah, old colony. There's a lot of, I think, French. I don't know.
I didn't know you were Barry Wikipedia when it comes to the...
That's just a guess. I'm saying that like, oh, it's all right. Yeah, you'd understand it, mate, because they speak French. This podcast is in fucking French.
I know, yeah. But yeah, I really like that, don't you?
Yeah. I think that's really cool.
It's pretty interesting. So, guys, there's the 23 hours worth backlog. Keep listening. Anyway, we need to give us some content in this show. We're just fucking riffing on shit.
We are, mate.
Right, okay, so... we're going to tear the film Oliver from 1968, Oliver Twist, the classic musical, a new bumhole, and tell you why it is so fucked up. Let's do it.
Okay, before we get started, though...
Yes, mate.
You know what we've got to do first, mate?
What have we got to do first?
I've got to do the old synopsis.
The old scene-up?
Yeah.
Right.
I've done it the past 2 weeks.
You have done it the past 2 weeks.
And I'm so happy I don't have to do it this week. Synopsis would go something like this. There's, you know, Oliver, he lives in, like, a care home. And then he goes to London and, yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
We start off very specific.
Yeah.
And then just trail off, and I'm just like, oh, fuck.
I was hoping you were actually going to do the synopsis.
Oh, no.
Has he actually just ended up
not a chance.
Okay, here we go. I'm going to really try and do this as abridged as possible.
Okay.
Because the plot is kind of thin in a way.
Yeah.
I know it's Dickens, but... Okay, so Oliver is a poor little boy. He's an orphan boy, born an orphan, and lives in an orphanage with lots of other kids. It's a really horrible orphanage. He gets kicked out for asking for more food. Man takes him on. He doesn't fit in with man, leaves man's house, stumbles across Artful Dodger, who's like a child gangster, gets in with the child gangster group, with Fagin as the patriarch of said group, starts to nick stuff with friends, then gets caught by the authorities. Then the authorities realise it wasn't him, and he gets taken on the under the wing by a very rich man who likes him. He becomes the rich man's manservant, boy servant. Then the old patriarch of the evil child gangster group steal Oliver back from his new rich patriarch man, take him under their wing again with the Bill Sykes Oliver Reed character, who now wants to kill Oliver Twist for blabbing about their sinister gangster behaviour. As this happens, Bill Sykes kills Nancy for trying to save Oliver and returning him back to his posh father figure. Then the town decide to kill Bill Sykes for taking Oliver, and Bill Sykes ends up hanging from a piece of string, and Fagin runs off with the Artful Dodger to continue their life of crime, whilst Oliver Twist ends up living with the rich man happily ever after.
Great, mate. Brilliant.
It felt like that that Radio 4 game show, didn't it? Do you know when you can't... Everyone said, bam, no, repetition. It felt like that. I keep wanting to say give us a clue, but it's not give us a clue.
You didn't see this, but Lewis was stroking his legs the whole way through that. He was like...
Yeah, I really was. Come on, Stars. I mean, I feel like I didn't really stumble or go, or anything that much. Did it make sense?
It did make sense. Right, okay. Yeah, yeah. Well, it did to me, because I watched the film recently.
Right, shit.
But
to someone who's in Ghana, for instance.
Well, people are listening. I mean, you know, it's the admin part. People who listen to the show, they've seen the films, so they know what it's about, really.
They know what it's about.
Yeah. Should we just not do the admin?
Yeah, should we just not do the admin?
Why are we doing it, mate? Everyone's seen the films. That's why they're watching the
show.
Maybe
they like the admin. It gives it structure, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But we don't play it for laughs. It's not funny. Maybe you are getting bogged down in the admin. People, tweet us. Oh, people love tweeting the show.
Yeah, yeah.
People, tweet us if you don't like the synopsis admin. Or tweet us if you do like it. Either way.
Yeah.
If anyone says anything, either way, that's what we're going to do.
Yeah, yeah,
That's all I can hope for, is one tweet.
Yeah.
They're not going to do it.
Yeah.
Right, okay, so, let's start the show.
Okay. Should we start at the beginning?
25 minutes in. Start at the beginning. Hi, I'm Lewis. No. God, how annoying.
I'm in the beginning. I'm in the beginning of Oliver.
Sorry. Yeah. So, here we go. We like to start with the opening frame of the film, don't we? Right at the beginning. Where are we? Where are we, Pete?
Okay. We are in some... place that is about 40 miles away from London.
Yes.
Because Oliver has to go there.
Outside of London.
Yeah, outside of London.
It's like Cambridge, maybe.
Cambridge. I don't think it's Cambridge. No, Cambridge seems too nice. It's probably a...
Urmston. No, that's in the northwest.
Yeah.
It looks like Urmston, though, doesn't it?
It's probably Benfleet.
Benfleet.
Yeah. UKIP stronghold.
Basingstoke.
So, the opening bit is where there's an orphanage. It's a workhouse. Home for orphans and paupers. Okay. Now, when you look up pauper in the dictionary, it says a very poor person. But I was kind of thinking, like, how poor do these kids have to be to go into that orphanage? Because this is set in, like, the mid-19th century, where everyone is pretty much a tramp.
Yes.
Like, if you're not royalty, then you are, like, you know, pretty much, like, absolute scum. Like, the average person back then, you know, would have been, like... shitting into a bucket, they probably have like one shoe. Like, how fucked up do you have to be to get put in that orphanage or workhouse as a kid? Even if you don't, because it's for people even who had parents. It wasn't just for all orphans.
Oh, really?
It was for paupers, for just poor people. So it's kind of
somewhere
like
somewhere to look after.
And if
the
you
kids.
Look at the standard of living back then, like how fucked up did people have to be? Would it like to get in there? Would have been like, Mister, can I come to the orphanage for paupers? I live in a shed with my 17 brothers. It's like, no, I'm sorry, sir. You have to be living in a shed with your 17 brothers and covered in your own shit. So there's no room at the inn for you.
Yeah. Yeah, how bad did the situation need to be for you to go there? Yeah. Because it is the grimiest fucking orphanage you could ever imagine, isn't it? It's just like, it looks like
a... It's like a concentration camp.
Yeah, yeah. Concentration camp. A toilet within a concentration camp. Like, how grimy it is. And in the place where they're supposed to sit and eat as children. Like, it, no wonder they're also malnourished. It looks like a fucking big potty, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And then they have that gorgeous little song with the food, glorious food. And it's like, mate, it's not glorious food.
I know.
There's shit hanging off the walls. It ain't glorious. It's inglorious bastard food. They're eating their own shit. Yeah? And it's just like, and I know we've been saying it, but we've done this by accident, but every single film we do in sequence, it gets worse and worse, the situation of the children's lives,
yeah,
doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because this time, this kid, it's not like... This kid would kill for Charlie and the Chocolate Factory's life.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
At least he's free. At least he's got a job. This kid is living in a toilet concentration camp, eating his own shit, walking around with no shoes on, and then in the opening sequence, he's got 10 adults trying to kill him, and then all the hundreds of kids who are trying to throw him in as well. They want to kill him as well. And everyone's screaming at Oliver, aren't they? They've got that song like, kill him, rip him, bite him off and fuck him.
Scold him.
Scold him.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like the child catch to the power of 10.
Yeah.
Everyone's chasing after him. They want him. And why do they want to get him? Because of more?
Yeah.
He asked for another dosage of his own shit in a bowl.
Yeah, yeah.
And then that's what they do to him. And this is just after they've been... you got the bit with all the adults in the orphanage, the borstal, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
They've been eating... There's a bit where they look through the window and they're all sat there in the staff room eating like a massive slap-up meal, aren't they?
That's what I thought was fucked up, because what they're eating in the first part is it's like gruel, isn't it, that they're given. It looks almost like... I mean, what is gruel?
I don't know, mate.
Is it like a porridge kind of thing?
Something like that, but
worse. Because I was looking at that and thinking, they're given this, like, you know, substance that's sort of like porridge or whatever, or gruel or whatever it is. So I was kind of thinking, like, oh, well, you know, it must be breakfast, you know, porridge for breakfast, that's not that bad. But then they look in that room and they see all them fat bastards having a roast dinner.
Yeah.
So you're like, oh, it's dinner time. You think, what the fuck are they being given for breakfast?
That's
their dinner.
Point.
Seriously.
That's a good point. No breakfast. Feet scrapings.
Yeah.
No, it's just really, it's just awful. And they're obviously really, really terrified of him. I love the bit where the kid says, can I have some more? I think, you know what, that really annoying thing that students and Australians do when they go up at the end of their sentence?
Yeah, yeah.
I think it was originated with this film because...
Really?
I just did it then. Because Oliver, he goes, can I have some more? He says, more? And he says, yes, can I have some more? So I think that's where it was kind of invented. And that's when he goes, more? So I think somehow that's planted.
That's how the Australian dialect came to be.
Yeah.
Oh, also, I think... Sorry, I'm just laughing at the point you just made. I think... Also, so they have to draw straws, don't they, for who's going to go up and ask for more food?
Yeah.
And Oliver gets, like, the longest straw, doesn't he?
Rather than the shortest
straw. Yeah, rather than the shortest. He gets, like, the longest straw.
So it's, like, whatever straw he picks out, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
They've decided.
Basically. But the thing I think that's, like, really messed up about it is, like, they've got, like, this dare going on between them. So the person who draws the shortest straw, the longest straw, has to go up and ask for more food.
Yeah.
But he's only asking for more food for himself.
That's all he's asking for.
Yeah, but I understand if, like, the dare was, like, to ask for more food for everyone, but his mates were just doing it, like,
or
just
to pull back the...
Just to see what would happen.
Yeah.
Like, do you know what I mean?
Exactly.
It's like, oh, mate, Oliver's going to go up and ask for some more food. It's like, oh, great, mate, I'm absolutely starving. Oh, no, he's just going to do it for himself. Why? Don't know. Might get the shit kicked out of him. It'll be funny. How bleak is his existence?
I know. And why is he so well-spoken?
I know.
I was going to bring this up later, but I guess you hear him speak from the beginning. All right, let's just... Okay, so he was born into an orphanage, pretty much. He was raised in the worst place possible with the most destitute children in a shithole, no education, nothing. The best he will be is a slave boy. That's it. Why does he speak the Queen's English? This is patronising. This is double standards. This lad, with his background, should be speaking like Paul Gascoigne.
And also, why does he look so posh as well?
Yeah,
he looks so clean. He looks like a member of the royal family.
They made sure to put what's he called? The Artful Dodger. They made sure to cover his face with shit throughout the whole film.
Yeah, yeah.
But like, Oliver is a little angelic bastard boy, isn't he?
Even when his face is covered with shit, Like, he still looks like really, really...
It's like Olive Oliver shit.
Yeah.
No, he's just... there is a bit of a double standard there, isn't it? It's like, well, we can't have the lead character speaking with a regional accent. No. I mean, they must be able to understand him, at least. I know his background, but they'll just accept, you know, believe in the... I don't know what I'm trying to say.
I get what you're trying
Benefit
to say.
Benefit of the doubt, I was trying to say.
Yeah.
But no, but he's... God, oh my God, my brain's just stopped. Right, okay, come back. Right, okay, let's move on.
Also, can I just say, the food they're singing about as well, in Food, Glorious Food,
yeah,
isn't really that great. It's like sausages, saveloy, steak. Like, I think they don't even know what carbs are. At no point do they mention carbohydrates in this song. They've never even seen a potato.
It's pretty bleak, really, isn't it?
That's
their idea of what glorious food is.
Sausage and mustard. Just sausage and mustard.
Yeah.
No veg, mate.
It's like bread. It's like some kid on an estate who's just going on and on raving about his amazing meal. And then you go back to his house and it's just a ready meal of sausage and mash. It's like, mate, this ain't glorious. You need to get out. Right, and then... And then he gets kicked out, and then the orphanage leader guy takes him around the streets and is saying, please have this child, he's a slave, he's shit. And then he's like the worst salesman ever, because he's like, what is it that he says?
This boy is shit.
He just says, he will steal from you, but buy him off me anyway. He's like the worst salesman ever. He says his mum looks at him once and dies. That's part of his sales pitch as well.
Yeah.
This guy would not... He would not do well in sales, I'm sorry.
And the woman, like, it actually really upset me, like, what Oliver actually goes through. It's so bleak the way he's just, like, paraded around the street.
Yeah.
Like, seriously, like, you know those guys that sell, like, the trolleys with the iPhone cases on them, like, in town, and they just... He's just like a trolley full of iPhone cases. That's what it reminded me of.
But he's a human being.
A little boy. And trudging about in the snow as well. And then... They get to...
And then who takes him in?
Yeah.
The lead guy, Leonard Rossiter from Rising Damp, takes him in with a creepy little
mustache. That's who it was.
Yeah, Leonard Rossiter.
Of course.
And then what's his job?
He's an undertaker.
Oh, my God.
You think, will someone in a sweet shop take him in?
It's like, there's a glimmer of hope.
Yeah.
Oh, you're an undertaker.
And the woman takes one look at him when he goes in and, like, looks at his face and goes, oh, these workhouse boys always cost more than they're worth.
Yeah.
And you think, well, how many, like... delinquent kids if you had
what happens to them because they're not there anymore in the coffins that you build and it's like then I love this hidden strength that Oliver has and this hidden like rage because they hardly do anything to him to provoke Oliver that our little angelic boy we were just saying and he twats the shit out of the girl who works the undertaker and her boyfriend who are both adults. He beats them up and I'm like, I don't remember this bit. Why is Oliver so evil all of a sudden?
We're
watching Oliver Twist or The Omen. It's just like, where's he got this like hidden sinister kind of violence? And then
you're
obviously
rooting for him though all the way, aren't you?
Absolutely.
That's
rooting
the thing,
for him
because he's had such an awful life.
The surroundings and the situation is just so depraved. You're kind of rooting for him. But he's got this sinister kind of, the secret hidden like aggressiveness that I just don't know where it's coming from. And then he runs off, obviously he gets kicked out, or he runs off actually, doesn't he? And then he meets up with the alcoholic Artful Dodger.
Yeah.
Who starts singing, consider yourself one of the family.
Yeah.
And he's going, part of that song is about how much everybody's drinking. And as far as I can see, every single character is just necking the booze. They really make a point of this, don't they? Like when Oliver gets caught for stealing, one of the judges takes a swig of whiskey just before they start in court, doesn't he?
That's
got nothing to do with the plot.
Yeah.
Just everyone's getting pissed.
Again, watching that with my adult brain, that judge has just got a serious drink problem, hasn't he? Like, it's not even funny. Like, he's just a serious addict, that judge.
Doesn't
just like necking
to the
sherry.
Plot.
Yeah, it's got nothing to do
nothing.
With anything at all.
And Fagin says to one of the kids, shut up and drink your gin.
Yeah.
I was like, did that just happen? What is this?
Fagin's such like a great character. Like, I don't want to go down like the whole sort of creepy pedo route with him because he's such a great character. But on paper, he is just such a pedo. Like,
he grooms them.
Yeah, and he's got like the creepy beard, and he lives with a load of he lives in a loft with loads of kids. With
loft,
loads of kids,
yeah.
And he makes them,
the inverse of Fritzl.
They drink and they smoke, and he feeds them sausages. That's all he does.
And he hates all the women that turn up.
Yeah.
What's he all about? And he's got that beard. What's he hiding in it?
I know.
his penis.
Sausages.
Sausages, of course. Same thing.
Also.
Actually, can I just relate to the last point. You know, I was saying, like, why is there so much drinking in this film?
Yeah.
Because it doesn't really have anything to do with the plot. And it's like, why are you doing this as a kid's film? Do you not think maybe, like, Oliver Reed was a massive alcoholic? Do you not think, like, maybe he rewrote the script on his break or something?
Yeah.
He was like, throw in a fucking drink. Reference there, like, fucking drink.
Yeah.
Or there was just so much alcohol on the set anyway, and then we just had to acknowledge it in the script somehow, because it was just fucking Oliver Reed just necking it back all the time.
that was the days of rock and roll actors, wasn't it?
Yeah, Hellraisers. Yeah.
He was one of the Hellraisers.
Him and Richard Harris, Peter O'Toole, and Richard Burton. They were the guys. Yeah. They were the guys. Right, sorry, what were you going to say?
I was going to say, why does Oliver go to London as well? So if you look at his circumstances, like, so his mum died when he was born. Apparently she took one look at him and dropped dead. So then he's been living in an orphanage. He gets taken in by an undertaker, and the undertaker and everyone there absolutely hate him. They say he'd be a good coffin follower for children's funerals. He then ends up singing Where Is Love in the basement of an undertaker's, right? Surrounded by empty coffins.
That is so bleak in itself, isn't it?
Right. And then when he does become, like, the coffin follower, he walks past the old orphanage, and all the kids are there laughing at him, going like, hey, it's Oliver Twist, what a knobhead. And it's like, how bleak is your life that, like, kids in an orphanage are laughing at you when you walk past? And then, this is basically the point I'm leading up to. So he's had this sort of sequence of events which were all really, really bleak, really dark. And so where does he decide to go? London. Why does he go? I don't know if any of our listeners are from London. If you go to London regularly, it's an absolute toilet. It is one of the most horrible, lonely places on the planet. Why wouldn't you go up north? Do you know what I mean? He's in Benfleet near Essex or wherever at the moment. Go up north. Why would you walk to...
Go to Sandbach.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Sandbach. Go to Cheshire. Why would you choose to go to London?
To Ramsbottom.
He wants to go somewhere homely.
I guess what they were trying to do is they're going to go for... This is what I thought was happening in the film, but it turned out not to be. Making it look like a rags-to-riches story. So he goes to the big city to kind of make it big.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Doesn't quite happen that way, does it?
Exactly,
Let's have a little segue and talk about why not.
Yeah, mate.
Bad Nostalgia.
Tune in every Tuesday at 9 p.m. on Fab Radio International.
Here we are, children. Come and get your lollipops.
We'll ruin your childhood.
We certainly will ruin your bloody childhood. Right, okay, so here we are, about midway through the film. He's left the undertakers, he's gone to the big city now, and then that's when he gets taken in by the Artful Dodger, and they have that little song, which is now the Halifax advert, disturbing.
Yeah.
He goes and meets, you've got your Fagin, got to pick a pocket or two, boy. Great song.
Yeah.
And then Nancy, the beautiful Nancy. And I think Nancy is at the heart of so many things that are fucked up about this film, actually.
Yeah.
Part of it is because she's so appealing, so friendly, so attractive, so maternal, yet does some really fucked up things in the latter half of this film.
Yeah.
And has a really tragic, bleak ending to her existence.
Yeah.
But before we get to that, she is so attractive, isn't she?
She's amazing.
She's too attractive.
But I think more captivating and more charismatic than Julie Andrews, I think.
Definitely.
I think she's just...
The boobs help, don't they? The boobs help.
I'm not going to lie. Yeah.
Yeah. We'd be talking... We'd be more complimentary about Mary Poppins if she had the puppies out, wouldn't we, to be honest? I mean, she's got some serious boobage going on. I mean, this is before, like...
I can't even remember that as a kid, though. Do you know what I mean?
No, I don't.
Yeah.
Maybe we were too young to be that sexually attracted.
Maybe it's because she wasn't... Because, you know, when we were kids, we fell in love with, you know, people like Ariel, like, you know, people like that. Maybe we didn't fall in love with her because she was like a proper woman.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
It was
She's
too
a
advanced.
Real woman. Yeah,
it was too
yeah.
sophisticated sexually for
yeah,
us to tap
yeah.
into why she was so attractive.
That wench
yeah.
sort of character.
But
yeah.
I think for that age of, like, towards the top end of toddler age or whatever, when you get into like 8, 9, 10 and you kind of developing some sort of sexuality, this is before the internet, before Sky TV. I think this would have been responsible for so many kids' first wanks in the late 60s. I'm telling you, she was the equivalent of Men and Motors for a lot of kids, I reckon.
Just sat there waiting for the 5-minute advert to come on.
Yeah.
The 5-minute trailer.
And then when VHS finally came out, yeah. Oh, we could press pause.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
On a massive remote.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But she's great, she's great.
Yeah, she is. But the character is quite messed up. It reminds me, you know, if you know, like, gangster TV series, like, you know, like Animal Kingdom and, like, The Wire, you know, when you've got the really sinister, like, mum that's sort of, like, keeping it all together. Like, she's very loving and caring, but she's like, sinister.
She knows they kill people.
That's what she is. Yeah,
she's a gangster's mom.
Yeah.
Definitely, but more so, because she's not passive. Because she gets involved in it, doesn't she?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, when he gets, obviously, he goes off and ends up living with this, the really rich guy, and then it's like, oh, happily ever after. But then she's the one who charms Oliver into the arms of the Oliver Reed character, isn't it?
Yeah,
because she says, oh, Mummy's here, and he's like, oh, Mummy! And he wants to play with her, and he's like, come here, let's go for a walk in the park. And she goes, right, there you go, Oliver Reed, take him. And I'm like, love, you know, Bill Sykes character wants to kill Oliver.
Yeah, yeah.
She facilitates that.
I know.
That is so messed up.
Yeah.
And before that, what, the Anything For You song, I Will Do Anything, she plays along with that, and that is basically the Artful Dodger saying, I want to fuck you. And then she plays along with it. It's like, oh, no, but I want to fuck Oliver Twist instead. It's like, no, love, you're 35, he's 8. Don't play along with this song. What's going on? So she tries to have sex with him, and then she tries to kill him.
Yeah.
And this is the nice, friendly, charismatic character we're talking about.
And then Artful Dodger starts singing I'll Do Anything to Fagin, and it's just so creepy.
Oh, yeah. I know.
When he's singing it to him, it's like, I'd do anything for you. It's like, well, you pretty much do, mate. You live in a loft with him, and you go out every day robbing people, and then just give him everything that you've taken. And he keeps it all in a box.
And what is the morality of this film, right?
I know.
Because, you know, he moves to London, and we were saying, oh, because it's a rags-to-riches story. I forgot the Charles Dickens story. I forgot what the plot was about. And I thought, oh, he's going to make something of himself now. That's why he's gone to London, and he's going to become rich, and it'll be happily. I thought it was that kind of thing. But no, what happens is he gets taken under the wing of the rich guy because they mistake him for another lad who tries to rob him.
Yeah.
And just by pure chance, he basically wins the lottery.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, you're in the right place at the right time, and you're an orphan, and you look cute. Do you want to just come and live with me and become rich straight away?
Yeah,
like, yeah, okay. So I'm like, oh, so you've not actually done anything to deserve this. You were just literally in the right place at the right time. You've gone from rags to riches, not through any merit.
Yeah, yeah.
Just because you look cute.
It's a really sort of like complex tale that's got loads of layers to it, and it's a real credit to like the actual story. Like it's not simple enough to really be a kid's film, is it?
No.
It's actually a really interesting story.
It is, yeah. You can tell the source material is obviously something very sophisticated, written by Charles Dickens, obviously.
Exactly.
You could have taken it anyway.
Like, yeah, but it's like they haven't simplified it into a musical kid's film.
It's not candy cotton, flossy, squeaky clean enough, really. Yeah.
But were you watching it thinking, why was I so into this as a kid? What did I watch it for?
I know, yeah.
It's so bleak.
Well, the kids in it look like they're actually having a good time, don't they? They're having a whale of a time.
Yeah.
And that is quite infectious.
But it
is in the context of a really depressing, depraved, existential, bleak, motherfucking film.
Yeah, yeah.
Which leads us nicely onto the Bill Sykes character, the Oliver Reed character.
Yeah, yeah.
He is right out of a different film.
I know.
He's like
a shred of humour to him, is there, at any point?
I thought as well,
oh, Bill Sykes, he's like the lovable rogue, isn't he? And it's like, no, he's a fucking psychopath.
He's really, really a psychopath. And Oliver Reed, love him, hats off to him.
Yeah.
He is giving it his all.
Yeah,
but he's playing it like something from an 18-rated film. He is a psychopathic bastard. It was just off the back of him doing loads of Hammer horror films as well.
Yeah.
So the interesting casting for a kid's film, basically.
Yeah.
It's like having Christopher Lee play fucking Fagin. Yeah.
Got a bigger pocket.
right, so that leads us nicely onto Your Song Is Fucked Up, because Your Song Is Fucked Up is taken from the song He Needs Me, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Do you want to just explain what happens just before this song?
Well, I will play the intro to The Song Is Fucked Up, and then let's rock with it, shall we?
Cool.
That song is fucked up. That song is fucked up. That song is fucked up. That song is fucked up.
Hello, people, and before we do carry on with This Song Is Fucked Up, one of the highlights of our show, which we've been enjoying immensely this series, I've got to say, do please follow our Facebook group. Follow us on Twitter at Bad Nostalgia. Listen to all our shows, all 23 hours worth on Podomatic, iTunes, Bad Nostalgia, Bad Nostalgia. Oh God, I love you. Right, so Pete, what did you want me to do? You want me to contextualise this song?
I'll explain.
Yeah, you go for it. Run with it.
So, just before this song, so I'll give you the context. Nancy and Bill Sykes having an argument in Fagin's loft with all the kids watching, and Bill Sykes just absolutely full on twats Nancy in the face. And I don't know any other kids' film that has like domestic violence in it, but like full on like domestic violence. But it's so messed up. And Bill Sykes then storms out, and he's just hit his wife in front of a load of kids, and it's really, really horrible for the kids because they all love Nancy, and then he storms off.
It's brutal, isn't it?
Yeah.
Brutal.
And then Nancy sings this song, and you expect her to sing a song about how she's sort of so hard done by and how she needs to, you know, look for another partner, and how, you know, ill-treated she is and how she needs to get away. But she sings a song about how she's gonna stand by his side.
Yeah.
Even though he treats her like this.
Even though he beats her up on a regular basis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It absolutely is so offensive on so many levels.
And the fact you aren't projecting this onto it.
Yeah, yeah.
This is what the song is about.
Yeah, yeah. This is what the song's about. And it's like a really lovey-dovey song as well.
Do you know what it reminds me of?
Yeah.
It reminds me of the song that Olivia Newton-John sings about the John Travolta character in Grease.
Yeah.
You know, when she's like, oh, it's the love that almost was, but I just need to work harder to achieve it.
Yeah,
and she sings that song on the balcony of her house.
Yeah.
And it's all wistful, and it's like, I'm going to get my man. And it's like, it's almost exactly the similar sentiment. So it's like, it's wanting us to really root for them to get together.
Yeah, yeah.
But he beats her up.
I know. And what it reminded me of as well, her singing the song and me actually like looking at the lyrics, it just reminded me of just a speech that some battered single mum does on like Jeremy Kyle when she's talking about just like staying with a drug dealer boyfriend.
Yeah.
If you look at these lyrics, it's like, right, Jeremy, like, as long as he needs me, oh, but no, seriously, yeah, he does need me. In spite of what you see, like, I'm sure he needs me. Like, who else would love him? Like, who else would be there when they've been used, like, so ill? Like, he knows I always will, as long as he needs me. Like, I miss him, like, so much when he's gone, but when he's near me, I don't let on the way I feel inside. The love I have to hide, the hell, I've got my pride, like, I don't care, Jeremy. Like, as long as he needs me, he doesn't say the things he should, he doesn't, like, act the way he should, but all the same, I'll play the game his way, like, I'm not bothered, like, as long as he needs me, I know where I must be, I'll cling on steadfastly, like, as long as he needs me, as long as the life I live, like, I'll love him right or wrong, and somehow I'll be strong, like, as long as he needs me, like, if you are lonely, then you'll know when someone needs you, like, you love him so, like, I won't betray his trust, though people say I must, I've got to stay true, just like, as long as he needs me.
Oh, you did it again. You did it again. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I can't wait to listen back to that.
Does need me. In spite of what you see, I'm sure that he needs me. Who else would love him still when they've been used so ill? He knows I always will, as long as he needs me. I miss him so much when
when he's gone, but when he's near me, I don't let on. Why? I feel inside the love I have to hide, the hell I've got my pride. As long as he needs me, he doesn't say the things he should, he acts the way he thinks he should, but all the same, I'll play this game. As long as he needs me, I know where I must be. I'll cling on steadfastly as long as he. Life is long, I'll love him, right or wrong, and somehow I'll be strong as long as he.
There you go, you absolutely nailed that, Pete. I was in awe of what you were doing. It was brilliant. It was absolutely fucking hilarious. Thank you for that.
Thanks, mate.
I can't wait to... I'm going to edit that down, people, to YouTube. So do stay tuned and do visit our YouTube channel. Right, so we've got the last couple of points now with the film. So we're getting two-thirds of the way through now.
Yeah.
The final section, really. We've got Fagin, who decides that he wants to possibly run off with all his wealth and leave... abandon the old kids.
Yeah.
And he ends up having a little song about it, and then by the end of the song he decides to go back in that original point, and he comes back into the house with the children.
Yeah, yeah.
But in this song, I just want to kind of talk about it a little bit, not in a song he's fucked up way, but I just want to kind of analyse the way he's singing this song. All of a sudden it sounds like a proper Yiddish type music in the background, isn't it?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden he's now got a really strong stereotypical Jewish accent.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, this is a really dodgy Jewish stereotype, isn't it?
I didn't realise. Yeah, I didn't. I didn't at all.
I thought, it's just a comedy character. I'm like, no, that's a comedy character racial archetype.
Yeah, yeah.
Of a dodgy Jewish thing going on there.
Yeah.
And this is only 20 years after World War II.
Yeah, yeah.
Just over 20 years. You would think we would try and go bend over backwards to be a little bit more progressive in your depiction of Jewish people, particularly in children's films. But this is right out of the Dark Ages.
Yeah, yeah.
Right fucking pogrom style kind of prejudice.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was so over the top.
Yeah. As well, I'm jumping ahead here to trivia, but like, everything about him is a stereotype, and I think the trivia said that, like, he decided not to do like a full-on Jewish accent like for the film because he didn't want it to be too much of a stereotype.
I
was like, really? That's what you were trying? Like, that was your effort to make it less Jewish? Like,
just tone it down.
Yeah, yeah,
tone it down. But he's Jewish anyway, the guy in the cast as well. He is Jewish.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So yeah, thanks for that. I mean, and it ties in with the morals as well, like, through everything that happens, you know, with films, particularly with kids' films, every single character, particularly the adult characters, go through a transformation, don't they? And they're flawed at first, and then some child shows them the way, they go on an adventure, they kill a baddie, and then they become reborn as a perfect, virtuous person, right? And that kind of happens, well, no, actually, that doesn't happen with any of the characters in this film, apart from Nancy, who then gets murdered. And the best example of this is right at the end, when Sykes is killed, everyone sees him hanging from that string, which is like something out of
that's one of the most powerful things I think I've ever seen in a film, and it's a
disturbing
kid's film.
Yeah, it powerful looks, images of violence.
Yeah,
yeah.
Do you remember that?
No, I don't remember
this
at all.
This is the thing.
Yeah.
I don't understand.
I don't know. But my original point is that the best example of someone not learning the error of their ways and just carry on is with the Jewish character. Because yeah. right at the end, the final frame is him and the Artful Dodger saying, let's go off and carry on robbing people.
Yeah.
So it's just like, the moral of the end of the film is like, if you're born poor, you stay poor. If you're born rich, like Oliver Twist, you end up rich.
Yeah.
And if you were born a scheming Jew, you end up a scheming Jew.
He's looking after those kids as well. No. Like, yeah, when the fuck off.
Not
he's taking all the yeah, not Nancy. She's dead. Bill Sykes is dead. He's ran off with all the money and the gold yeah. and everything yeah. as well.
Yeah.
Consider yourself. Where's the sausages?
Yeah.
They're gone. They're dead. Everyone's dead.
Consider yourself malnourished. It's just gone. Yeah. So that's that. And then it's just this. The moral of the story is yeah. It's just this idea of entitlement. What happens with Oliver at the end, we realise he was born from a rich girl who ran off, and then he's just, all that's happened is he's rediscovered that he was born into money, so he's just got what was in he was entitled to anyway.
Have you read the book?
No, I've not.
I just
it's very conservative, the ideas behind it.
Yeah.
Really, really conservative.
I'm really intrigued to read the book, but I just think...
I am, actually,
I just think that, like, they sat down, and when they sat down with the final script for this film... They all went to each other. This book that we've, you know, this musical that we've adapted from the book is so bleak. This is just the best we could fucking do with it. Honestly, do you know what I mean? I genuinely think they just threw
in a few songs to detract from the fact that actually really
just
disturbed.
The fact there's a murder in it.
Think about it. If the songs weren't in it.
Yeah.
What would that film be like?
I think it would be a great dramatic piece.
Yeah, it would not be a kid's film, no. would it? It wouldn't be a kid's film. So, right, so we got to the end of the film there. Actually, before we do wrap up with it, actually, I do remember there's a bit as well where everyone tries to go after and chase after Bill Sykes because he's just killed Nancy.
Yeah.
And, like, chase after him, he deserves to die, and then he ends up getting killed. But rather than it just be a few people, it's literally hundreds of people who are there watching him be chased across the rooftop and then die. And it's like, I'm just thinking... Are most of those people just there to watch someone die?
Yeah.
I don't think they actually want to, like, help out. They're just there as spectators to watch a guy die. Pretty sure that's what it was.
Or did they all just have, like, a raging hard-on for Nancy? Was that it? Because why would they, like...
Yeah.
I mean, if,
we've
like,
all shagged her.
Yeah,
we want to revenge her.
Yeah. I mean, like, if I saw, like, you know, a group of five guys, like, you know, chasing a guy down the street, and they're going, like, oh, we're going to get this guy. Like, it's, you know, he's, like... He's murdered a woman. I'd call the police. Do you know what I mean? I wouldn't go, like, the whole city is, like, absolutely, like, enraged by it.
Chasing after him with flaming torches. Like,
yeah.
With his own dog.
Yeah. But I'm sure back then murdering your wife was just, like, an everyday thing.
Well, pretty much, mate.
Do you know what I mean?
Right, okay, so we've got to the end of the film now, and we're going to have a little segue, and then we're going to do a bit of film trivia time, people. So, stay tuned.
Very well. I'll bide my time. And as for you, my fine lady, it's true, I can't attend you here and now as I'd like, but just try to stay out of my way. Just try.
Tune in every Tuesday at 9 p.m. on Fab Radio International.
I'll get you, my pretty, and your little dog, too.
Will ruin your childhood.
Really, that's my favourite new segue. I really like that one. I just love the screaming at the end. We're going to do that one not next week, the week after, The Wizard of Oz. And we still haven't filled the vacant slot for next week.
The penultimate episode.
The penultimate episode.
Series
people,
4.
Please, do tell us, what do you want from us? Vintage-wise. Has to be pre-1970. What do you want? Right, okay, so a bit of trivia time, please. Yes.
Yes.
Film trivia time.
Do you want to kick us off, Pete? What have you got for us?
Okay, there is a scene in the film where Nancy asks Bill if he loves her, and Bill says, Bill says, of course I do. I live with you, don't I? That line was ad-libbed by the actors, because Oliver Reed was walking through a very, like, tough neighbourhood one day, and he heard a woman saying... do you love me? And the man went, of course I do. I fucks you, don't I? And he genuinely asked the director, Carol Reed, to put that in the film. Was he just that off his fucking head on booze he tried to get that in a kid's film? Of course I do. I fucks you, don't I? And also, she would have said no. What do you think he tried after that? He was like, can we have a... Of course I do. You show me your tits. What can we put in there? Like, he's just nuts, wasn't he?
Oliver Reed is amazing. If Oliver Reed is in any film, you're going to have great trivia.
Because
behind the scenes, he was so insane. Yeah. I'm amazed that he made it as an actor, because how he managed to be focused enough when they said action, I just don't know. And the fact that he can perform that amazingly with such intensity, that behind those eyes is an absolutely insane animal. It just makes him all the better to watch. But this isn't the Oliver Reed show, although I have got a good piece of Oliver Reed trivia myself, actually. I don't know if you saw this one, but it occurred to me as I was watching it that Oliver Reed is the only person who doesn't sing in the film, and I thought, oh, it's because he's playing the Bill Sykes character and he's like really sinister and all that kind of stuff. But he made the Bill Sykes portrayal in the way it was through his performance. And there actually was some songs for Bill Sykes to sing, but they weren't really convinced by Oliver Reed singing them, because he obviously played it in such an intensely disturbing way. It wouldn't really have worked. So he did actually sing a song, and I would love to see it somewhere. But they didn't put it in because they were like, this isn't working. And I just started to imagine like what an Oliver Reed song would have been like, as Bill Sykes, like, I'll do anything for a pint of vodka. I would have loved to have seen it. I would have loved to have seen it. Right, have you got anything else?
Mark Lester, who played Oliver, he was terrified of Oliver Reed throughout the production, because Ollie Reed, he chose to remain in character as Bill Sykes all times while he was on set. And this guy was absolutely nuts, so God knows what he was doing. Like, probably like, just like, I don't, like twatting female runners who didn't put sugar in his coffee. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, what was he? Just murdering women down alleyways.
Just stealing shit off people. Yeah. Have you seen that bit when he's got like a Mary Poppins pockets? And he's like, what have you got for me from the house? And he pulls out like a whole living room's worth of stuff out of his pocket with this really deadly serious look on his face. Oh, I love Oliver Reed so much. Have you seen this bit about the onions?
No. Oh, yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yeah, there's a song called Where is the Love, sung by Oliver Twist.
Where is love? That's the Black Eyed Peas, mate.
Where is the love? Yeah, there's a song called Beat It that he sings midway through. There's a song called Where is Love, sung by Oliver Twist, about midway through, and he couldn't cry on cue. So they rubbed his face full of fucking onions to get him to cry. Guys, just put some water on his face. They actually rubbed onions all over. Oh my God, he's been through enough.
He was, yeah. And that was in the basement of an undertaker's as well, surrounded by empty coffins.
Well, it's probably full of mould in there anyway. Yeah. I'm sure everyone was crying.
Rubbing onions
into his face, bloody hell. And then I've got another bit of Bruce Forsyth is the Michael Jackson of this series.
He keeps
popping up.
Has he popped up in this one?
In this one, he pops up. He was rumoured to have been played to be playing Fagin, but he didn't.
Oh,
he didn't get it.
Yeah,
you got to pick a pocket. Oh, that was awful. I can't do it. Pink, can you do it?
You've got to pick a pocket or two.
That's it. There we go. Right, so he was going to play it. Anything else?
That's everything, mate.
That's everything from you, that's everything from me. So we're going to give you a final segue, and then you got it, people. We're going to do the roundup. Stay tuned.
I want some more.
What?
Please, sir. I want some more.
More?
Please, sir. I want some more.
And then me and my friends were like, literally, we just want some more. I told you, mate. He invented it. Literally, more. Oliver. Right, so out of five...
Yes, mate.
Horror.
Horror. I'm going to give it a 4.
I'm giving it a 4.
Because there's murder and blood in it.
There certainly is. Violence.
Violence. A 4.
I'm giving it a 5 because there's moments of brutal violence against women to the point where they die and she's someone you'd like. It's fucking violent.
Yeah.
Right. Sex?
Sex. I'm going to give it a 3.
I'm giving it a 4. 2 each for each breast of Nancy's.
Oh, you really like them breasts, didn't you, mate?
Yeah, they're just heaving.
Mm.
Morality, out of 5.
Oh, 5.
Yeah, I'm giving it a 5 as well, because in so many ways, on so many levels, it just really is coming from a very odd, extreme conservative viewpoint. And obviously, I'm incredibly liberal. So, racial bonus points at the end.
I think Fagin alone deserves a 4.
Yeah, I'm giving it a 3. So, here we go. 9, 13, 18... 21. This is going to win the series.
I've got 21.
I'm pretty sure this is going to win the series. That's one of the highest ever. Maybe in the top 3 ever.
Yeah.
So that's pretty amazing. And it deserves to be. On the face of it, it deserves
to be. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It? Willow levels of epic proportions of existential shit. It's just fucking... Yes.
But a much better podcast.
But a much better podcast, yeah. Yeah. Okay, yeah. We kind of indirectly promote the Willow episode every episode.
There's no such thing as bad publicity.
There's no such thing. So, thanks for listening, people. Do keep tuning in. We're going to be here every Tuesday. We're on Podomatic, iTunes. Keep listening to us. And I've enjoyed it. Have you enjoyed it, Pete?
I've loved it, mate, this week.